I had almost no clean clothes left since the end of campaign travel had been nonstop, but I managed to pull together what was wearable. I just have to get through the weekend, I remember thinking. Surely it will be over by then. Little did I know that I would not return home to Austin for 3 weeks and that the recount marathon would last 36 days, causing confusion and uproar in newsrooms around the country and unprecedented angst for millions of voters. Starting in Pinellas County near Tampa Bay, I traveled across the central part of the state, reaching Kissimmee, near Orlando, by the end of week one. Then things got particularly interesting when the Gore campaign targeted Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach counties, each a Democratic stronghold, for manual hand recounts. I remember joining up in Broward with a volunteer organizational team made up of advisors to Ohio Governor Bob Taft. They were there to help make sure tables were staffed with Bush volunteers and that the volunteers understood when and when not to challenge ballots. We coordinated our efforts out of the office of the county GOP chairman, Eddie Pizzulli, who was helping lead the Bush efforts. The machine recount had already been conducted as required by law because of the closeness of the election. Bush remained in the lead. A campaign could request hand recounts, but Broward, like other counties, could order a hand recount only after a vote by the county canvassing board, typically made up of the county judge and two county commissioners. Technically, the canvassing board was supposed to vote for a hand recount only after an initial sampling of precincts had been conducted and there was reason to believe there were errors serious enough to warrant one. Initially, the Broward County Canvassing Board voted against ordering a full hand recount. The Taft volunteers, Pizzulli, and I had a brief celebration that day, thinking the result was final and believing nothing would change. I was dispatched to Miami-Dade County, and by the time I got there, Team Taft from Ohio had arrived as well. The canvassing board there likewise voted against a full hand recount. Another victory, we thought. But then we learned that the Broward Canvassing Board had reversed course under pressure from Democratic trial lawyers enlisted by the Gore campaign. Suddenly, we were headed back to Fort Lauderdale in Broward County. The recount process was moved to a larger venue, the Broward County Hurricane Center. Around 15 or 20 long tables were brought into a large room, so both GOP and Democratic volunteers could sit at the tables and jointly review ballots one by one. The county people knew they were under a time limit to get the ballots reviewed, so they wanted as many tables going as reasonable. If the opposing party volunteers at a table could not agree on the voter intention revealed by the ballot, it would be set aside for the three-member commissioner's court to determine by majority vote. The canvassing board was made up of two Democrats and one Republican. You may remember pictures of the Republican commissioner with his glasses perched on top of his head and eyes wide open, glaring at the ballot as he holds it up to the light. I believe it is around midnight of the first full day of recounting that we discovered a potential issue of concern and a great angle for a news story. Ed McNally, a lawyer who had worked in the first Bush administration, and later the second, had come to Broward to help with legal issues. A Bush volunteer approached us just after the hand recount was halted for the day. "There's something over here that you should see," he said. He walked us over to the table he had helped man and pointed to the floor. On the floor were sprinkled a significant number of CHAD. As the world came to learn that month, for voting purposes, a CHAD is a tiny, confetti-like rectangular piece of paper that is made when someone makes a hole in a punch card. A CHAD can take several different forms. A hanging CHAD is connected to the ballot by one of its four corners, a swinging CHAD is attached by two corners, and a tri-CHAD by three corners. Then there is a pregnant or dimpled CHAD that has an indention in it, supposedly from a voter who may have been trying to cast a vote, but the CHAD remains attached at all four corners. I never thought I would be a CHAD expert, but the 2000 election made CHADology an essential topic. As we stood looking at the tiny bits of paper scattered all over the floor, Ed came up with a clever idea. "These CHAD could be considered evidence of a crime," he said. If people had been handling the ballots too much or too carelessly, or, worse yet, if they'd been deliberately poking pieces of CHAD out of the ballots to alter the election results, that could explain why so much confetti was littering the floor. The local Democratic leaders had already dispersed for the night. We sought out the local election official still present as the ballot boxes were being secured in the back room, which bore a large glass window on the entrance side. A sheriff's deputy was present to guard the room. At our request, the election official ordered the fallen CHAD on the floor to be collected and placed in a large envelope marked Crime Scene Evidence. Our campaign and supporters had already questioned the integrity of the hand recounts, given that the ballots were now being handled yet again after being put through a machine twice. The wear and tear of multiple handlings, we contended, could be altering the votes or knocking Chad loose. Now we had evidence to back up our claim. After consulting with Ed, I quietly went around to reporters individually the next morning to alert them of the previous night's development. "Did you hear about what happened last night?" I asked. When they replied they had not, I explained. "They, election officials, seized a bunch of fallen Chad late last night," I said. "You ought to ask to see the envelope they put them in." I knew that, in the heated atmosphere of Florida 2000, an envelope marked crime scene evidence would make for great pictures. I also coordinated a news conference with Eddie Pizzulli. Eddie did a great job, standing outside the building with the words Hurricane Center plainly visible, talking about how Hurricane Chad hit Broward County last night, and raising questions about the integrity of the whole hand recount process. Just as we hoped, the news coverage added to the nation's doubts about the legitimacy of the recount. A couple of days later, I was sent to nearby Palm Beach County, where a hand count was also underway. I took a clear plastic bag filled with more fallen Chad from the second night. The election officials turned down our request to seize another batch of fallen Chad, so we did it ourselves and marked the bag with the words Fallen Chad, Broward County, and the number of paper fragments, well over 100, that we'd picked up off the carpet and tables. I held up the bag when I arrived in Palm Beach County for assembled reporters and again raised questions about the process. Mark Roscoe, the Montana governor and Bush advisor, went out on the Sunday political shows that week. At his request, I sent him the bag of fallen Chad. He referred to it as clear and compelling evidence of the completely untrustworthy hand recounting process. Personally, I viewed the recount process as selective, unfair, and sometimes wacky, allowing canvassing boards that were majority Democratic to decide the fate of disputed ballots based on what they believed voter intent to be did not strike me as particularly objective. In Palm Beach County, when the canvassing board was running up against the deadline to finish its hand recount, our lead lawyer on the ground there, John Bolton, named American ambassador to the UN in Bush's second term, and his team, including Florida attorney Mark Wallace, reportedly caught the Democratic commissioner on the board directing sheriff's deputies which specific precinct boxes to bring out for recounting. The problem? The boxes were supposed to be selected randomly, and this commissioner was allegedly telling the deputies to get ones that were considered heavily Democratic and, therefore, most likely to help pick up votes for Gore. Frankly, I believe the Gore campaign made a strategic mistake by not calling for a manual hand recount in every county. That would have been hard to dispute as anything but fair. At any rate, the fallen Chad provided us some great fodder for questioning the selectivity and subjectivity of the hand recounts. But the Florida recount continued for a couple more weeks. No one had ever witnessed anything like it. Certainly nothing in my political background had prepared me for it. I remember as a third grader staying up until 3:30 a.m. to follow the results as my mother won the closest mayoral election in Austin history. That seemed like a rare anomaly to me. Mom later won a re-election by the largest margin ever. On day 21 of the recount ordeal, I was granted a reprieve and allowed to travel home for the weekend. As I was waiting word on whether I needed to return to Florida, Ari Fleischer, who had already been named the transition press secretary, called from Washington to offer me the deputy press secretary position for the transition. He also asked me to be his principal deputy should the Florida results hold. I accepted fairly quickly. Rather than returning to Florida, I headed to Washington to begin work on the transition team. We had a temporary space already set up for our use until Bush was recognized as the official winner and given taxpayer space and funds from the General Services Administration in Washington. My focus shifted quickly to helping Ari with press management and dealing with the multitude of transition issues. When Florida Secretary of State Katherine Harris certified Bush the winner in Florida, Dick Cheney was already overseeing the transition out of temporary space near his home in McLean, Virginia, just outside of Washington. He formally requested that the GSA provide us the keys to the government transition office near the White House. The GSA, under White House direction, refused. This did not make Cheney happy. On December 12th, when the Supreme Court made its controversial ruling ending the Florida recount and dispelling questions about the result, the GSA invited the vice president-elect to a press event at the transition office. Still stewing about the initial snub, Cheney had already sent a lower-level official, me, to receive the keys. The idea was to send the GSA a message. I had no idea what I was supposed to do. When I got to the transition office, I was given a brief tour, then handed the keys in front of a battery of television and still cameras. Although the assembled reporters seemed to expect some sort of speech, I said little other than, "Thank you." I think the GSA got the message from Cheney, and they worked hard to make up for the displeasure they'd caused him from that day forward. Within days, I was standing in my new office behind the briefing room, a barren space with a couple of chairs and a computer. It all happened so quickly that I barely had a chance to absorb the amazing fact that I was now working for the nation's 43rd president in the West Wing of the White House. By and large, Bush and his campaign did a successful job of defining him and starting the process of changing the image of the Republican Party nationally. Bush was elected with a clear agenda: tax cuts, education reform, strengthening Social Security, strong defense, and military transformation. He was also elected with a clear public image as a different kind of Republican, a compassionate conservative who understood and cared about the needs and interests of the middle class, the working class, and the poor, and was willing to use the government when necessary to help meet those needs. As Bush took office, buoyed by the nation's relief over the ending of the prolonged election process, as well as by Al Gore's gracious concession speech, Bush was promising to bring the country a fresh start after a season of cynicism. His intention, it appeared, was to reach across the aisle, as he'd done in Texas, to forge cooperative links with Democrats in Congress and elsewhere in pursuit of goals that would benefit all Americans. The days of endless scandal and partisan warfare in Washington were coming to an end, or so I believed. Events of the months and years to come would test the sincerity of Bush's intention to end the excesses of the permanent campaign era, as well as the depth of his promised commitment to ensuring that every member of his administration adhered to high ethical standards.